Hello and welcome to the Blazers Edge podcast. I am Blazers Edge feature writer, contributor Dan Morang, and normally I'd be joined by managing editor Dave Deckard. However, this week we'll be joined by Adrian Bernicic, Os Blaze, for those of you who don't know. And Adrian is actually one of those guys that we've kind of scoured the globe for. If you aren't aware, Blazers Edge, not only readers, but writers and contributors are all over the world, and he's out of Australia, as the Os Blaze would, you know, lead you to believe. And before I go any further, I should say, if you're looking for a podcast, you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, anywhere else you need for your podcast needs. Go ahead and search us out there. And Adrian, how you doing, buddy?
Not too bad. How are you, Dan?
Not too bad. Now, I wanted to ask you, you know, just kind of give you an introduction to everybody here who may not be familiar with you or what you've done here at Blazers Edge. Obviously, you're a news contributor, but you're more than that as a Blazers fan coming out of Australia. How does somebody in Australia, with taking away NBA players in Australia, and you and I have talked about this, you weren't necessarily jumping on the Blazers when Patty Mills came out here, but as a Blazers fan before that's correct, right?
Correct. Yeah. And I so my history with the Blazers goes back probably to the 90s. So I'm 31. I'm pretty sure I'm the same age as you, Dan, actually. I grew up in the early 90s, obviously with the Michael Jordans and the Shaquille O'Neals of the world kind of blasting onto our screens in Australia. And I remember collecting the 1992-93 Upper Deck basketball cards. And I remember getting one of the packs and opening it and seeing this guy called Clyde Drexler. And he looked interesting. And I think a friend of mine had some vision of Portland playing. Obviously, it was pre-internet. And I always kind of like the way he moved and the way he played. And obviously throughout the 90s and early 2000s, the internet was slowly getting more prolific, and we started getting more of the NBA. And I think I always kept tabs on how the team was going, but I think when we got Aldridge and Roy and then Oden, I really started to take notice. And obviously Patty getting picked up in the 09 draft was kind of the clincher for me, and I've been following Blazers Edge ever since. And I think within Blazers Edge, I probably wouldn't know much about basketball because there's such an amazing diversity and insight into the game for a non-American like myself. And my background, I'm a journalist by trade, so it really helped me learn how to pick up the stylings and who to go to, whether it's Woj or Mark Stein or anyone else across the league. So that's a little brief introduction to my own basketball history.
There we go. We got Blazers Edge spanning the globe and bringing people together through basketball.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, so we want to get into the meat of this because on Thursday we had the NBA schedule release come out, and that's like an early Christmas for hoop heads. And I don't know about you, but I like to play the game of, okay, the schedule is out. Let's go ahead and go through this game by game and analyze this and see what the win total comes out with. And before we get into that, though, let's go ahead and look at the very first game because there's actually an Australian connection here and a divisional connection. So you got the Utah Jazz and maybe the reemergence or the emergence of Dante Exum back out there. How are you looking at that first game of the season?
Look, as an Aussie, I really hope Dante does well. He had a lot of hope coming out of him before he was drafted, and obviously he's not playing for the Blazers, so I hope he doesn't do too well in that first game. But I'm really rooting for him. I hope he does well. I think this Utah game is really going to be a benchmark for where Portland stands. Obviously, a number of experts like yourself, Dan, have picked Utah and Portland to be around the same level in the standings, and I think straight out of the gate, I think our performance on opening night could indicate how we might go for the rest of the year, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, you know, it does set the tone because I think the measuring stick for both these teams is they're kind of looking at each other. They're both really young teams. Portland obviously has more of the superstar quality with Damian and CJ. I look at Utah, and I see them as a team that it seems to be more complete. While Portland's sitting here trying, and we're having discussions about who's going to be in the starting lineup, Utah is dealing with the situation of who's going to consist of our bench, because they're literally 12 to 13 deep. You've got guys like Jeff Withey and Joe Ingles and Shelvin Mack who were on their roster who were contributors last year because of so many injuries, and then you've got a guy like Trey Lyles is it's about how to work those people into the game. And Portland has that same issue, but I don't think as many people are locked into positions, playing time, and rotations as you may believe Utah could be.
Well, their backcourt's really interesting. Obviously, you've got Dante, and we can't forget Joe Ingles, who's another Aussie in that side as well. But with George Hill coming in, and obviously they've got Joe Johnson and Boris Diaw, but their backcourt's really interesting. I'm curious to see what Quinn Snyder does off the bat. Whether they start George with Dante backing up. They've obviously got Alec Burks as well, and obviously Joe Johnson can play a bit of two as well. So I'm really curious to see where they go in their backcourt. Obviously, their front court is pretty much Hayward, Favors, and Rudy. But yeah, their depth, as you say, is just incredible. They go really deep, like we do. But obviously, we're not too sure of the our rotation. I am a bit bemused by the number of people who are thinking that Mason's going to start at the center. I just think Festus is the no-brainer decision to start. I just think with his kind of gamut of skills, I think he has to start on that team and leave Mason to that second unit where he can do a bit of ball handling with obviously sharing the ball handling with CJ, not as much as CJ, but he can kind of help facilitate some of that offense as well.
Yeah, you know, Dave and I have had this discussion. We've had it on the site on a couple different pieces over the last, you know, 10 days or so. And I think really that's kind of the crux of which way Portland goes at the center position kind of fills in the other positions. You could say yeah. Damian and CJ and probably Aminu are probably locked in. The three and the five, though, are kind of not necessarily head scratchers, but you're not exactly 100% certain who's going to be there on opening night. And I think you're right to an extent. I think Azili makes the most sense. But the thing that I'm wondering is how healthy he is, because he did come off the injury, and a lot of people that I've talked to in the Golden State organization and people who write down at Golden State of mine believe that he may have come back a little bit too early. And throwing him out there with Portland early on, if he's not feeling 100%, even if he's feeling 100%, he doesn't have the camaraderie, the chemistry, the understanding of the system right out of the gate, which is why I think Mason's going to start. Now, from 30,000 feet, I think Azili's going to be the guy. I think he makes the most sense. But I think Mason's the guy on opening night. Now, 30 games into the season, that could change. But I think Mason's the one on opening night.
Okay. It'll be interesting to watch the preseason games throughout October as well, because I can only imagine that Stotts is going to play with his lineups as well. I mean, they came out at the Turner press conference and said that he's going to be starting at the three, but I'm like you. I'm not convinced. You could throw Allen in there. You can throw in Harkless. And I'm really, really glad they brought back Mo, by the way. I know people were dithering. I think he's a great player, and he could also be a great trade chip 12 months down the track or even at the deadline this year.
Yeah, of all the signings that people kind of were head-scratching about, Mo's the one probably Mo and Myers are probably the ones that bother me the least, because they're both still incredibly young, and I think they still have a lot of potential left. And the difference in salary between those guys and a guy, say, like Allen Crabbe or Evan Turner is obviously very different. Speaking of the first 30 or so games, though, as we look at the schedule, kind of steer back to this, is that those first couple of months are brutal. And you and I have talked about this pre-show. Yeah. There's a stretch run in December that just looks vicious. I mean, what do you think that Portland looks like come, you know, New Year's? I've got them slightly under 500 or right at 500. I believe it's 18 and 17 or 17 and 18, depending on the coin toss, is what I came up with January 1st as they play the Timberwolves. What are you looking at when you see those first couple months?
As I said to you pre-show, Dan, I've kind of broken the season down into games of six, and I'm looking at those first five set of games of six. So I've got us, I think, two or three games above 500, but it's not convincing. And there's that road trip. There's that particular road trip through early December and mid December that are just going to be pretty full on. I mean, we've got we've got Chicago, Milwaukee, Memphis, Indiana, and the Clippers. We come home for the Thunder, and then we go at Denver, Golden State, and Sacramento. So it's going to be tricky. I think towards the end of the year it looks a little better, but again, we do come home with Minnesota, Utah, the Spurs, and New Orleans. And New Orleans were an utter disappointment last year.
That's a team we don't really know what's going on. I mean, it could be the team that made the eighth seed in the playoffs 2 years ago, or it could be a team that falls apart. And I think that's the team that often gets overlooked as we head into the season. They still have Anthony Davis. Yeah. They still have Jrue Holiday. They still have Tyreke Evans. They still have a lot of talent on that team to where it's not a place you want to go and play on a five games and seven nights kind of road trip or on a back-to-back. I mean, it's the NBA, and really, with the exception of a few teams in the league, you're every night you're susceptible to a loss. But I think teams like that that have players that are still very talented at the back end of a road trip or the back end of a homestand before you're heading into the playoffs, things of those nature can really kind of screw with the mojo.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly touching on New Orleans, I always go back 3 years, draft night, when they traded Nerlens Noel for Jrue Holiday. And obviously Jrue's had his injuries, but I'd have nightmares about a front court of Anthony Davis and Nerlens Noel. That'd be brutal today. I mean, I know hindsight's a beautiful thing, but that front court would be so scary nowadays.
Yeah, no, I mean, you'd have two incredibly active and mobile players that would just cause a nightmare for teams. I'm one of those guys that's always been a huge Jrue Holiday fan. Injuries have obviously kind of slowed him down and hindered what he's done. So I still think there's hope and there's chance for him. And talking to the New Orleans guys at Summer League, they're excited for the team heading into this year. And they kind of did what the Blazers did a couple years ago, and they signed some value contract guys. And so they're kind of hoping they can get the same kind of bump that the Blazers got off some value deals and then kind of build from there off of, obviously, Anthony Davis. So we'll see how that one
absolutely
turns out. Now,
yeah,
we'll take a look at the schedule a little bit more here, is that as the calendar turns into 2017, things definitely get better for Portland. If you look at the pre-All-Star break, Portland's got one of the toughest, if not the toughest, schedule in the league. I've seen others where they say that Portland has a middle of the road or one of the tougher schedules overall in the league. The nice thing is that if Portland can weather the storm early on, they can really make some hay come post All-Star break.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, so
I've got them, and I said to you pre-show, heading into April especially, I've got them going 8-2. Just the last 10 games here, we've got Minnesota back, because then we've got Denver, Houston, and Phoenix home. We go to Utah, and then the last four games are in Portland with Minnesota, Utah, the Spurs, and New Orleans. So I think we've got a lot of potential to come home strong. Fingers crossed we're coming into a decent playoff run as well. But I think you're right, post All-Star break, there were a lot more home games. And a lot less back-to-backs, which is really interesting.
Yeah, no, the way the NBA schedule is this year, and thank God for Adam Silver and the way that they've kind of adjusted the schedule, every year for the last couple of years, the starting date has gotten bumped back a day, another day, another day. So we're at October 25th this year. 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I believe, we started on Halloween night. So we're 6 days back. So those 6 days, while it doesn't sound huge, that could be the difference between six back-to-backs. So, I mean, that's
absolutely
those little tiny tweaks like that are so huge. And if anybody's ever seen what's going on out there in NBA analytics and research, the level of basketball falls off so much on these four games and five nights and these back-to-backs that it's as much about protecting players as it is about protecting the product. And that's really, I think, been a huge thing for Adam Silver in tweaking and changing these. So when
do you think Pop has his decision to rest players on the second night of back-to-backs has kind of pushed Silver's hand? He's seeing what Pop's doing and saying, look, we can't have all 30 teams doing this. I think Pop played in kind of saying, look, I'm prepared to drop a game on this night and this night because I'm preparing preparing for the playoffs. I want to ensure that my team is ready to go come late April, early May.
Yeah, I think that really plays into that because, we're talking about the product. And if the product on the court means that a coach is opting to sit a player, now you've got fans who aren't seeing the players that they've come to pay to see. And no other sport can I think of this. I mean, you've maybe baseball, but we're talking about a schedule that's way, way more games, literally double. And so I don't know if I think you're right in that extent that Pop kind of may have played a part in forcing their hand and altering how they deal with this. And speaking of Pop, and the Spurs in general, he's got a guy on his team that in Patty Mills now that at one point in the NBA there was people talking about how he couldn't make the team. And then he wasn't more than a role player, not even a role player, a rotational player with the Blazers. What has it been like as a fan in Australia to kind of see his growth and to see him come from, St. Mary's to a very large part of the Spurs rotation now, and even more so as a starter for Team Australia and the Boomers?
Well, it's been a bit of progression and regression with Patty. As I said before, I was a Portland fan before Patty came on board, but when he was taken, I think it was pick 55. I was really excited. Had an Australian on my team. This is going to be great. Obviously, didn't see a lot of playing time under McMillan. Kind of fell out of the NBA. He actually went to China and played in our local NBL. I think for a season, and our NBL unfortunately isn't what it used to be. Back in the 90s, it was actually quite a decent league. Not so much anymore. But he worked on his game, and I'm not too sure of the actual ins and outs. But he landed up in San Antonio, and he's a completely different player. He's obviously shed a whole lot of weight, and he's that reliable bench point guard that Pop turns to, and I'm really, really happy with what he's done because he really does send an example for other Australian players. And it's actually interesting, and a lot of people don't know this, but obviously in Australia we follow Australian rules football, which is especially in the southern states religion during the winter months. The captain of my team, Collingwood, Scott Pendlebury. He actually went to the AIS basketball kind of scholarship, and he was set to do amazing things, and then decided not to go and do that. And his replacement was Patty Mills. So, if Pendlebury hadn't decided to do that, we might not have actually seen Patty in the first place. So, it's actually really interesting to see how the twist of fate has kind of opened opportunities for him.
It seems like every NBA story has one of those, unless you're. Yeah. A complete superstar, LeBron James level, kind of anointed, not to use his words, but the chosen one at an early age. These guys that come in as these late draft picks and make good, there's always these chance opportunities along the way that all add up into, getting that opportunity and then allowing them to succeed. Now, kind of carrying on here, since, again, we have you, live from Australia, how Yep. glued to the TV were you during the Team USA-Australia match?
I was looking forward to it for weeks. As soon as I found out when Australia was playing America, I said, "Yeah, that's it. This is our benchmark. We can either do really, really poorly and kind of revert back to what people think of Australian basketball versus American basketball, or we can do really well." And I'm so glad that it was the latter of the two. I loved the media coming out of players both before and after the game. I think Boga came out and said, we're not going to go up to the US players and get our shoes signed by them. We're not going to look up to them. We're here to win. And even after the game, both Patty and Boga said, all the reporters in Australia were saying, "Oh my God, you pushed the Americans so far. You came within 10 points. You almost won it." And Boga came out and said, "No, we didn't win. We lost." Like, that's really positive, and I'm really glad they're talking like that, because if we finish second in our pool, we're a chance. I mean, I'm getting ahead of myself, but we're a chance to perhaps meet the US in the gold medal match. And while that's a long way off, we've got to get through Venezuela tomorrow morning, and then obviously kind of stay away from Spain in the other pool and get through with some other teams. I would love for an America-USA gold medal match because I think it could be really entertaining.
Yeah, no, honestly, I was talking about this on the radio the other day, is that the growth of Australian basketball has been huge. And the question that I had coming out of that game was, if Ben Simmons plays in that game, does Australia win? I mean, does that infusion of talent really take Australia to the next point?
I'll give you another hypothetical. Does Carmelo Anthony not make 8 3-pointers?
9.
Cause that,
he was 9 of 15 from 3.
And that's not really what he's not. I mean, he's a pure scorer. Like, Melo is amazing offensively, but is he really known for that, for those long distance shots? I know the 3-point line is brought in for Olympic basketball, but
which may actually factor.
It really blew me away how well he was shooting.
Yeah, because you got to remember, Carmelo gets a lot of his points in the mid range, and that 3-point line coming in may be the difference between him being able to knock down 9 and knock down 3 or 4. But yeah, I mean, and then there's other hypotheticals that are out there. I've heard that people are like, well, what if Team USA had Steph and what if they had LeBron? We're still talking about an NBA, or basically an NBA All-Star team that's out there for Team USA. Meanwhile, Australia's running out one starter, one NBA starter, Andrew Bogut. Patty Mills is not as well.
And we also have Exum, and obviously you mentioned Simmons. We've got Exum, and people forget about Thon Maker. Thon Maker will actually represent Australia. I know he was born in the Sudan, but he did his schooling in Perth, so he's eligible to play for us. So I'm really looking forward to our team at the World Championships in 2 years' time, because that could field a team, a potential starting lineup of perhaps Paddy, Daly, Simmons, Baines, and if Bogut's still around, I doubt he will be. But you've got Maker there if he develops into that center that we hope he will be.
And that's really a modern-style NBA team that can spread out the floor and knock down some shots and be really athletic. And as we look forward to, the Olympics and kind of how Team USA has fared, I think it's a fair assessment to say that Australia is now the favorite for the silver medal. I honestly don't think that you, as an Australia fan, you're going too far outside of the box in assuming that, they get second in the group and have a chance to push Team USA again in the gold medal match. So I think you're right on point with that.
I still worry about Spain. I know they're currently sitting at third in Pool B. I just think the team, I know they're getting older, but a team with that much talent, you still have to watch out for. And obviously Serbia pushed America even closer just yesterday morning. So there are still other teams that can do it. France have picked up after their initial loss. So there are still a lot of teams out there that can win. Obviously Lithuania are there as well.
Yeah, and Lithuania and Serbia to me are two teams that are dark horses out there that have looked really, really good. Obviously, Serbia pushed Team USA to the brink the other day, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. I want to roll this back though, because we again talk about the schedule, and you and I were talking before we got going here about what we saw as the outlook for Portland as far as end of season win totals. When you tallied it all up and when you got to your win total, what was the number that you landed on?
Okay, so I, as I said to you before, I kind of gave Portland the benefit of the doubt kind of those last 10 games where I said they'd win probably 8 of their last 10. I've got us sitting at 49-33, but I'm kind of giving three games either side of that. I think 49-33 is probably where I'm sitting at the moment, but, I mean, injuries, you've always got to consider injuries can happen, and one of CJ and Dame go down, and anything's possible.
Yeah, no, it's always hard to factor in injuries, and I try to at least, when I look at the schedule, if I know that the team is playing a mid-season game against a team that's full of guys that have, either older, they're playing on a back-to-back, they've got injury history. If it's a coin toss, those are the kind of games that I'll give to Portland. Because if you look at Portland, historically, this roster, and knock on all kinds of wood, nobody on this roster really has a history of being injured outside of perhaps CJ with his feet. So you've got a guy in Dame and Aminu and Harkless, these guys that have been pretty darn resilient through the early parts of their career. So when I looked at the schedule, and much like you, that last 10 games I think is huge. It's could set the tone, and it's definitely going to decide, or it should decide, how the division kind of pans out. Portland plays Utah twice in the span of, I think, 3 days in the final week of the season.
Yep, that's right.
So you throw in a game against Minnesota. It's three division games that close out, I think, in the last five or the last six. So, and honestly, all three teams play each other. I was talking to the guys from Minnesota the other day, and it's a three-team round robin there. Minnesota plays Utah, Utah plays Portland, Portland plays Utah, obviously twice. And the way that those games go could decide who ends up at the top of the division right there. So it's going to be crucial. I landed on 46 wins. I went a little bit more conservative, and it could go better. I don't see it going much worse. The only way I see it going worse than that is if Portland really struggles out of the gate. Because as we talked about, those first four games, Portland could easily go 1-3. So anything better than that is, I think, is a good start. And as you build
We could go 0-4. I mean, playing in Denver, you never know.
Yeah,
either.
You're playing at altitude, and you're playing a team that's very young, to say the least. But they do have talent on that team now. You've got Jokic, you've got Nurkic, Wilson Chandler, Gallo, Will Barton. I mean, we're not talking about a superstar-laden team, but it's still a team, nonetheless, that can get points. And obviously, playing in Denver is something that's difficult to get used to, when particularly early in the season. So, yeah, I think.
Yeah, and as you said before, if we can get through to at least New Year's Day with an above 500, staying above 500, I think we can build on that come 2017, because it's going to be a lot kinder to us in those first 4 months of the new year.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what total Vegas comes out with for the over-under on Portland this year. As I look at it, obviously it's always about trying to get money on the line, but for some reason, the number that keeps popping up in my head is 45.5. And if that were the case,
yep,
I think I'd take the over. To me, that's a difficult line, though, because like you said, one injury away from being below that. And everyone's like, and I know the reaction will be from Blazers fans is 45.5. That's only a game and a half better than we did last season. And we added Turner, we added Azeeley, we didn't really lose anybody. But the same token, there's teams in the division and in the league that have gotten better. There's teams that are getting older and more prepared. There are teams that are getting healthier. And while it sounds good to get to 50 wins, you still have a team in Golden State up top that's going to eat up a ton of wins. And then below them, you've got the Spurs, who I think are still probably a 55-plus win team, even without Tim Duncan. And then after that, it's really a dogfight. I mean, the Clippers, I think, are still the number three team in the league, or in the Western Conference, but their injury history with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin is not exactly golden at this point. So they could fall off, and that could allow a team like Portland or Utah, even Oklahoma City, to jump up and into the mix. So
and don't forget the Grizzlies. I think the Grizzlies, if Marcus is as good as he was before the injury and Chandler Parsons is injury-free, There's no reason why Memphis can't go back up there as well.
Yeah, this is the first time that Memphis has had a small forward that's of note since Rudy Gay. So having wing play for them is going to be really interesting how that plays out. And really how Portland comes together as a unit and how the rotations plan out, where it would be really nice if Portland started with an earlier schedule so they could kind of figure those things out and have those growing pains and those learning issues that every team does when they add and subtract personnel and change rotations early on would be great. Portland's going to have to kind of do that with a trial by fire, and that kind of goes back to the point why I think Mason Plumlee ultimately ends up starting the season. But I think that it kind of wraps up how we're sitting as we look into the doggest of dog days. Once the NBA schedule's released, just kind of sitting here and waiting until NBA training camp. Is there anything at all, Adrian, that you want to add to this?
No, nothing at all. I just wanted to thank you, Dan, for giving me the chance to come on and be on the podcast. Obviously, listen to it every week, and it's a pleasure being on it with you this week.
Oh, Adrian, it was awesome to have you. It's always great to have people come in that bring a different perspective, particularly a different international perspective, and their fandom around the world, around the globe, and how the Blazers kind of bring everybody together in one little central place. All right, well, we're going to wrap it up here for now. For Adrian, I'm Dan Morang, and thanks for listening. Again, if you want to find us, you can find us on iTunes, on Stitcher, everybody, and go Blazers, and have a great week.